This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August the 21st, 2012, episode number 471. Horses in the Morning is now live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the summer. Today we bring you a highlight show from the Horse Radio Network to enjoy. If you caught this one already, please feel free to join us again live tomorrow morning on Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. And of course, you can catch all the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com or subscribe on iTunes by searching for Horses in the Morning. Today's feature episode is the Driving Radio Show, episode number 58, called Driving Goes to the Dogs. That's just what you think it is. Wendy and I had a chance to talk to a couple of people who put dogs in a harness. We talked about driving Borzois and drafting Bernese Mountain Dogs. Plus, Dr. Wendy Ying did another traditional Chinese medicine update. You can hear all of that coming up in a couple of seconds. First, I wanted to remind you to get your really bad ads in. We have a pair of summer Winnie socks for your horse that we are giving away. These are the socks that help keep the flies off and protect their legs. So we're going to be doing that as a giveaway this Friday for really bad ads. You guys have been terrific about sending in some very good, really bad ads. We've had a couple of very funny weeks, so hope we can continue that tradition this week. Send your really bad ads to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. That's Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com, and she'll make sure we get them in the lineup for Friday's show. Thanks again. See you tomorrow morning live here on Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. And right now, the Driving Radio Show with Dr. Wendy Ying.
This is episode 58 of the Driving Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network. Driving goes to the dogs. Please support our sponsors as they make this show possible. Our sponsors are the American Driving Society at americandrivingsociety.org and WYSIWYG Carriages at sportcob.com.
This is Glenda Geek.
And I'm Wendy Ying, and you're listening to the Driving Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network.
Well, howdy, Wendy.
Hi, Glenn.
I'll tell you what, we've had some excitement in the world of driving today.
We sure have. It's been a very exciting day.
Now, this show is going to the dogs, and unfortunately, the Indiana State Fair went to the dogs, too. But a terrible accident there, which you don't often see in the driving community.
Yes, I posted that to our Facebook this morning because they had a stagecoach accident this morning. They were they had the State Fair Queen on, and they were driving around opening up the ceremonies for the fair, and the
indoor in the arena, yeah,
in the arena, and the stagecoach tipped over, and no one was killed, but five people had to go to the hospital, and I guess they did get the horses stopped, and none of the horses were injured either. So,
well, now I'm trying to remember. I watched the video this morning. Did the horses flip too, or did they stay upright?
It's just the stagecoach tipped over.
Tipped over. Okay. Yeah. And yeah, they were coming around a turn. Now, what do you think caused it? He was booking pretty good for a top heavy vehicle like that.
Yeah. I mean, the video I saw was from pretty far away, but I think what happened was it either, you know, those are on thoroughbraces, and if it was real top heavy, once they start going, they can really lean, and the thoroughbraces are the leather, like, it's like a leather hammock that the body of the stagecoach sits
on. Which levels out the ride, yeah.
Right, so once that starts rocking, it can really get going, like you get to the point of no return. But also, depending on what the footing's like, sometimes even with the marathon carriages, you're going around a corner, if your outside wheel hits something that stops it, instead of sliding, you tip over like that.
Ah, okay.
So I had one of my very worst accidents in driving like that. I was coming around a turn in a hazard in just a little marathon carriage, and my outside wheel hit a clump of grass, which like stopped our momentum from sliding, and we just tipped over.
Well, and this guy that was driving it apparently has let me see here. It said he had 20 years of experience in driving stagecoaches. So it's
right.
And he had six horses. They think they were quarter horses, according to the article. They kind of look like quarter horses.
Yeah.
And they were doing a pre-entertainment before the six-horse hitches came in.
Right.
But they actually had to clear out, they had so many ambulances come and stuff. They had to clear out they actually cleared the whole 3,000 people out of the stadium.
Oh, my God.
Until they got it cleaned up, and then they let them back in and continued with the show. But, and that's a big fair. That's the one last year that the stage collapsed 1 year ago for the Sugarland concert. Do you remember that?
Oh, that's right.
It was a thunderstorm
or something.
Tragedy. If I remember right, there was a big storm. And wind.
I think, and a huge wind gust came and pushed the stage down.
Yep, and that was actually friends of Sugarland. Jamie from the morning show knows a couple of the people that work with Sugarland and are on the road with them. And apparently they were like 2 minutes, they were late getting to the stage to start the show. And they were like a couple minutes late, and it was that couple minutes that the roof came down. If they had been on time, they would have been crushed.
Wow, they're so lucky.
I know, so... apparently this guy that was driving this stagecoach had 20 years of experience. So,
I bet it was some kind of footing issue. You know, he probably is used to the stagecoach sliding a little bit, so he knows what speed he can go around the turns. And then he must, that's the thing. It's just a horrible accident. You know, hit something and over you go.
There's one fair queen that got a ride of her life.
True, she did get a ride of her life.
And apparently Erica, the fair queen, was dressed as a cowboy and was actually sitting on top.
So and that's a long way to fall, because you've sat on the top of a stagecoach,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
You're like 6 feet up.
I know. You feel like you're up there. That's at least a story up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So no matter what speed you're going, even if you just tip over at the stop, that's a long way to fall.
Yeah, so it was pretty bad. Apparently the audience, was pretty appalled about the whole thing, obviously.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was our big news here of the day. And we are going to the dogs today. We're going to be talking about something a little different today. Every once in a while, Wendy and I like to mix it up and do a little different kind of show, because there's all different kinds of animals that pull vehicles.
Right.
And we're going to be talking about dogs today, two breeds in particular. One is the Bernese Mountain Dog, which are known for their draft work in pulling weight, actually, and they have competitions for that. And then there's another that we found, a lady in Florida, probably the only one of a couple in the country that actually do this, and she actually drives her, get this, Borzois, which are a relative of the Greyhound. So she's going to talk to us about what it's like to drive Borzois. And you're going to hear later on, Wendy, how fast she has gotten these dogs up to in the cart.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's not slow. What do you think? What's an average trot? How fast are you going in a cart when you're just doing a trot down the road?
Like just doing a trot down the road is like 14 to 16 kph, which I think is like 10 miles an hour. Yeah, like if you have this big old road trot, you probably could get like 20 miles an hour.
Yeah, so, I mean, you you're going to hear the amazing speed. That's nothing compared to these Borzois. So
wow.
We're going to find out about that a little later in the show, too. We got Susie from the American Driving Society coming up to talk about something they have going on that's exciting. And then you're going to be back with for the first time in many weeks, a traditional Chinese medicine update. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about the Chinese plum and what we use that for medicinally, and also how you can incorporate that into your diet to help you with certain issues.
Now that's called, is that the umboshi plum?
The umboshi plum is like it's the Japanese version,
okay.
And it's the one you most commonly see in the human diet. So we are gonna talk about that and some recipes for you that if you want to eat that, because I think that'd be great for you, Glenn.
Okay, all right. I like plums. I'm not too sure. I've seen pictures of these, and they kind of look like dried up marbles.
They are dried up marbles, but I'm going to tell you how to incorporate those into something yummy that you'll like to eat.
Okay. Is it ice cream?
No, but that's a great idea. Maybe I should have a little Iron Chef contest in the kitchen tonight and try to whip you up some ice cream with umboshi plum.
All right. Very good. Well, we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. But first, we're going to go to Susie at the American Driving Society. Well, hi, Susie. What's going on over at the American Driving Society?
Hi, Glenn. Well, we're hot and heavy in the planning stages of the ADS annual meeting, just about 6 weeks away. We're so excited. We've added a special event for attendees, which is going to be a consignment sale. So attendees can bring their bits that they're not using, harness, whips, you know, any carriage driving related item. Bring it to the sale. And they have the audience that they're looking for to sell their items right there. So it's going to be a great benefit, I think, to the driving community here in the Midwest, and be able to provide newbie drivers, you know, a chance to get the equipment that they need to get started at a reasonable rate.
That sounds great. That's a great idea. And then, you know, the good thing about that is there'll be all these experts here. So if people are buying their first harness, they can just ask somebody for help.
Exactly. You know, it's going to be, there'll be stuff for sale and they'll say, I have this kind of horse. You know, this is what we're doing. You know, would you recommend X? And there'll be all kinds of people there that have been there, done that, tried that, you know, and be able to help the new people along. Not to mention people that maybe want to move up, you know, try some different things.
Right.
They'll be able to purchase equipment there at a reasonable rate. And so it'll be wonderful. We have carriages already consigned. We also have some really interesting art type items. We have some coaching prints that are coming. And we have some first edition carriage related driving books that are coming. So those are pretty special. So we'll have some really neat stuff for people to buy.
And so how do people consign their things?
On the ADS website, on the meetings page, there is a link to all the consignment information. We have two volunteers that are helping us organize it all. They can bring it with them to the meeting. So they can bring it with either on Thursday night before the meeting, or the morning before we go out to Hickory Knoll. So anytime between 9 and noon on the Friday of the meeting, they can come bring their stuff. We'll tag it all. We'll put it in the consignment area. And then when all said and done at the end of the meeting, we'll have a check right there for them. So they'll be able to take the proceeds if their item sells. The ADS keeps 10% of the proceeds of the sale. And that money will stay in the Midwest region for another driving activity.
Great. That sounds super.
Yeah, we're hoping that it really will inspire a lot of people to come and visit and be able to, you know, help out some expenses of having to travel to the meeting and so on and so forth. If you bring something good, you might pay for your whole meeting.
Right.
And now the meeting is when again?
It is September 28th through the 30th in Fitchburg, Wisconsin.
That's Fitchburg, Wisconsin. You broke up there a little bit. And all the information is on the website at AmericanDrivingSociety.org.
Yep.
You can check it out there.
And registrations are due September 1st. So if you're thinking about coming, you know, get your registration in. We sure would appreciate getting many of them in on time because it makes our job a whole lot easier.
All right. So registrations are due by September the 1st.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Susie. Well, that was great to hear about that. Now, are you going to the meeting this year? I think if you don't, you're going to get crucified this year.
Yeah, I am going. Okay. I am going. I'm on the slate for a board of directors, so I am going to the meeting, and I'm going to vote. And like I said last time, if you can't get to the meeting, you should send in your proxy. And also, now that I heard about this consignment sale, I am definitely going. I'm going to bring a giant suitcase.
There you go. Yeah, that is one problem for people that are flying. It's a little harder to bring full sets of harness.
I know, because I want to bring my team harness, and I have a pair harness for sale, and it's all super heavy. I don't know how I'm going to get it up there, but.
No, you might have to switch and drive up. There you go. 3-day drive just to get to the meeting.
Yeah, I'm not going to drive up. It's too far.
It is a hike. Well, let's start our Going to the Dogs show here today with Jennifer Brightbill. She is from the Bernese Mountain Dog Club of America, and she's going to talk to us about these lovely, sweet dogs and what they do and what kind of competitions they have with carts. Hi, Jennifer, and welcome to the driving show.
Hello.
I'm so glad you could join us today. We're going to the dogs today, so we thought we'd have some fun with this. And I had a friend who had a Bernese Mountain Dog, and it was the coolest dog ever. We loved that dog. And she didn't actually use it for anything, driving or drafting and anything, but it was a great farm dog. So first, tell us, do you have some Bernese Mountain Dogs?
Yes, I do. I have four girls that live with us right now, a mother and three of her daughters from each of her litters.
Now, do they all have the black and white markings, black, white, and brown markings? Are they all the same that way?
Yes. Yep. The variation is how much white that they have. And
that's mostly
the
on their
white
chest and their face.
Yes, yeah. And their feet.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm looking at pictures.
And the tip of their tail.
Yeah. Huh. Now, they came originally from Europe, and they were used as draft animals in Europe, right?
Yes, they came from Switzerland, and they were used to pull the milk cans to the dairy.
Right. Now, would they have one, or would they have multiples hooked up to do that job?
I've seen multiples, and I've actually seen where they had two dogs hitched up, pulling a cart into town with a puppy just roped to the side of the dogs. And the story was that the puppy was learning the route, and the dogs actually went to town by themselves, delivered the milk, and then took the wagon back home.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
There was no person leading them? They just went that way on their own?
Yeah, and they were taught how to do that, and then they taught each new dog how to do it.
That's incredible.
Okay, my greyhound would never get that. She'd just be gone.
What if there was a squirrel on the way? Glenn, you'd never see Gloria again.
I know, she'd just be gone. Well, that's
milk
incredible.
Would be everywhere.
I didn't realize that they did it on their own.
Yeah, they're a very loyal farm dog. They love their family. They like to work, and there was probably a treat at the other end, so that was always made it worth it.
Now, the one I knew was also very loyal to one person. Is that true, or can they be loyal to the whole family, or do they pick out a person?
They can be loyal to the whole family, but I think most dogs tend to like one person in their family.
And they tend to be emotional dogs, for this one was anyway. It was very kind of emotional dog.
They are. They're very tuned in. We have a young girl who, as a puppy, we lost a dog that she was quite close to when she was only about 4 months old. And then within 2 or 3 months, we lost another dog, which was her grandmother. And she has always been very sensitive to everybody's needs. She makes sure that everybody comes down the stairs in the morning, that everybody's there and assembled and accounted for before she'll go outside.
So tell us what they do as far as, working draft breed here. What are they used for in the United States? And I know you actually have competitions. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Bernese Mountain Dog Club of America, which we call the BMDCA, has a very large working program for the dogs to draft. And we hold the different clubs around the U.S. hold draft tests. And generally there's up to about 24 entries a day, and the dogs do a series of exercises mostly with the cart. And the first thing that they do is a small pattern without the cart, just to show that they're under control with their handler. And it's just a walking pattern. It's usually what we call an L, where the dog goes out, makes a turn, goes a little farther in another direction, and eventually they come back, they stop. And then they do a recall where they leave the dog, and then the handler goes to the other side of the ring and they call the dog to them. And then after that, they hitch and harness the dog. The dogs in the higher levels start out with the hitch and harness. And then they go through a maneuvering pattern which has objects that they have to go around, through. They don't go over or under anything. And they have to do a series of stop at a certain point and allow a stranger to greet them. There's a small load that's put in the cart, and they have to do all of this under control and with only voice commands.
I was just going to say, because you're not actually driving them, right?
We are not driving them. Okay. We're walking along with them.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the other thing that they do is, in a group, of about 5 or 6 dogs, they go out in a group and do a half mile, what we call a freight haul, and they haul either 20 pounds at a lower level, or they haul their weight rounded down to the nearest 10 pounds. I have a team right now that I just actually had out this morning practicing that are going to do brace work. So they work together in one cart, and the two dogs are side by side, and they have to pull 160 pounds together in the competition.
Wow. And that's in a two-wheel cart?
It's a two-wheeled cart with three shafts for the two dogs.
Oh, that's great.
Because I've seen the carts also have,
that's a lot of weight.
Two full sets of shafts. Is there one that's most common? Is it common to have just three, or?
We see more carts that are brace carts with three shafts, but you can have four shafts.
Okay.
I've seen it done both ways.
Okay.
The most common is three. There's also a way where there's only one shaft in the center, more like the way that some of the horse pulling apparatus are done.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And what's your harness like?
We use what's called a Siwash harness. It's a pulling harness that the mechanics of it, the dog pulls from the shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the breast collar, the breast style harness, where they pull from their chest only, kind of across the chest, this they pull more with their shoulders and their chest, and many of us feel that it's a much more efficient harness and better for the dog.
So it actually has a breastplate, but it also goes up over the top, like a harness.
The Siwash does not have a breastplate.
Okay.
The Siwash is a V shape on the front of the dog and an X shape on the top of the dog.
Okay. That
and then
sense.
All those pieces come together on the sides, and they're hitched to the traces that pull the cart.
Okay. Got it. It's a little different than the horses.
There are styles that are more like a horse harness, but they're not as, in my opinion, they're not as efficient.
Can you imagine driving your horses through a competition like this, Wendy, with no reins and bits?
No, and just like asking them to do it, asking them to behave, they'd be like, forget it. They'd be eating grass and just ignoring me.
There are some workhorse or draft horses that probably would do it. But So now at what age are they best for competition, and is there an age that you start to retire them out?
That does depend on the dog. They can compete at the age of 2 in the U.S. under the Bernese Mountain Dog rules. And in order to compete at 2, you would need to start training them earlier than that. I start my dogs quite young, but with tricks. We do tricks of getting between the shafts of the cart, and we do tricks about getting in and out of the harness and little things like that so that they're used to the apparatus. And very little pulling until they're at least usually about 18 months, although in Canada we can compete at 18 months. So since we live close to the border, sometimes I will compete with a younger dog if they're really taken to the cart nicely. As far as retiring, because we can compete with our dogs at the novice level, we can go back to novice after we've been doing...
Oh, you can go backwards?
We can go backwards now. We changed that rule. So now a lot of the older dogs will continue to draft 9, 10 years old.
Now, as far as training them, and I'm sure Wendy was curious about this too, training them, is it just a reward system? Is that really what works for the dogs, is constant rewards and doing that? And do they take to it easily, or are there some that just take to it better than others?
There are some that take to it better than others.
Yeah.
And there are some that I have a youngster now who is not overly fond of the shafts hitting her side.
I'm picturing the shafts in the cart going at about 30 miles an hour down the road to the neighbor's house. Am I right?
We've seen that before, yes.
Yeah, I bet. Squirrel!
Squirrel, yeah. So I try to make it fun. Yes, I do use rewards, but you also have to wean them off of that because in competition we can't use reward.
So, oh, you can't?
Not in competition.
So voice only and praise, that's it?
That's it.
Oh, wow.
So we make the praise really fun.
Yeah. Huh.
Interesting. How many Bernese are there in the country? Do you know? It's part of
I don't. Thousands.
Yeah, and they do many other things with them. It's, you know, draft is just one of the many things you guys do with them.
Yes, there's a lot of people that do obedience, tracking. There's a large group of people around the U.S. that are doing agility with their dogs, myself included, herding. The newest sport is nose work that's out there that people are doing with their burners.
Okay, I don't know if I want to ask what that is.
Nose work is scent detection. It's based on the training of dogs for police work, for bomb sniffing and that sort of thing, taking it to a sport level.
Gotcha. And they're also used for assistance dogs, aren't they?
They are to some degree.
Okay.
It's a little bit harder for them because of their coat. You know, they carry a large coat, and to be with a person, you know, possibly in inclement weather, hot weather, cold weather is no problem. And they're not as long-lived. So, you know, they need a little more coat care, so it depends. Like, guide dogs typically don't use a heavy-coated, shorter-lived dog.
Right. They spend most of their time inside.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people do use them for assistance dogs. They're very good at, you know, they can detect, like any dog, they can detect seizures, be of assistance for somebody who needs, you know, maybe some stability for walking, you know, that type of thing.
So how does some
therapy dogs?
Oh, I bet they make wonderful therapy dogs. You just want to cuddle them.
Yeah.
So if someone has a dog like this, how would they get started drafting?
The easiest way is to find one of the local clubs if they're close by. And I think every Bernese Mountain Dog, every club that's associated with the Bernese Mountain Dog Club of America, all the local clubs have people that do drafting. Most of them hold clinics sometime during the year.
Mm-hmm.
There's also several email lists out there. Yahoo, there's a Carding L that anybody can join. And a lot of good people there that will help with carts and harnesses and where to find things and how to get started.
Right.
And actually, Wendy, we're in the way it looks, we're in the Chattahoochee Valley Bernese Mountain Dog Club.
We are?
Yes, we are. Florida is in that. Now, I imagine Bernese Mountain Dogs don't do really well in Florida because they are very hairy.
I think they spend their midday inside in the air conditioner.
Yeah, they would have to because they are very hairy dogs. But they are the sweetest, most lovable dogs out there. Now, have they had the health problems of other breeds that have had breeding problems, or has that been kept under control pretty well?
Are you asking about health problems associated with breeding or without breeding?
Well, you know, because of breeding, so many of the other, especially larger breeds, have had the hip problems and everything else. Has that happened with the Bernese, or have they been insulated from that a little bit?
It has happened, but we also have a wonderful database called BernerGuard, and it has the ability, everybody can put all of their information on there. So whenever I have my dog's hips and elbows x-rayed, that information goes into BernerGuard, and I can look up other dogs' information, and we can track the lines of dogs that have better orthopedics for breeding purposes and use that to our advantage.
I knew they were doing that with horses. I didn't know they were doing that with dogs.
That's really great. It's really good to see responsible breeders like that take a stand.
Yeah, it's an amazing database. It has information from dogs all over the world on it.
Have you ever run into any, Wendy, in your practice?
Not any of these type, but I've done some. I haven't done any driving dogs yet.
Okay.
And I haven't done any Bernese Mountain Dogs, but I've done some big St. Bernards and things like that.
Yeah.
Mostly for arthritis, you know, because they're so big.
Right. Well, this has been terrific. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. People can find out more by going to bmdca.org, and we'll post that link on our Facebook page and also on our website at drivingradioshow.com. Well, good luck with your Bernese. What a terrific breed. Well, that was terrific. And, you know, Wendy, I found this when I was doing research for the show today. I found this company called, it's called PullDogs.com, PullDogs.com. And I went there and I went, what the heck is this? They sell carts. I mean, the cutest little carts to hook to dogs. And most of these are for doing like yard work and things like that. But if you go to the PullDogs.com and look at it, you're going to see some of the, I mean, they just make them cute. They're just cute.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're totally adorable.
I want one of these carts, and I don't even have a dog that can pull.
Well, why don't you teach Glory to pull the cart?
Yeah, Glory, my greyhound. Yeah, she'd be pulling the cart all the way to the next county.
You know what? Glory could pull the cart, and Tamika could sit in the cart. But I want one with a Surrey top, because Tamika doesn't like the sun to hit
that
her.
That would be a wild ride for Tamika. As Glory takes off at 50 miles an hour. But the one good thing about greyhounds is they don't go for very long.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. But there are some beautiful little carts here. You have to check it out at PullDogs.com. And it's a canine cargo cart. The canine cargo cart. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And they have all different breeds pulling. It's not just the ones you would expect, you know?
That's true. I know. I like that. I like that it's like anything. You could teach any dog to drive.
Yeah, and mostly this is just to put them to work to help you with the yard work in the back. So,
right.
You know, why not? I mean, they eat all our food. We might as well put them to work.
You know what I'm thinking? I think a lot of dogs, when you're training them to drive, just kind of lay down.
Yes, I think that's probably true.
Don't you think?
I think that's probably true. It's like, I don't get this.
Yeah, this is not fun.
Speaking of driving dogs, there are some dogs that are doing a terrific job driving with a very special cart, and they are Borzois, which are kind of a relative to the Greyhound, the Russian version. And Patty Neal is going to talk to us about them, and we're going to talk to her about how she drives her Borzois here in Florida. One. Well, hi, Patty, and welcome to the Driving Radio Show. It's so good to have you on to talk about Borzois.
Oh, I'd love to.
Now, I came across your website by accident, I think, and I was just searching for driving dogs, and your website popped up, and I went, you know, I love Borzois, and I didn't know they drove. And then I started looking around your website at all the cool pictures. What made you think that you could take a Borzoi and drive it?
Well, from the first Borzoi I ever had, starting in 74, I always thought, well, they're almost pony size. I should be able to make them do something like a pony or a horse, which I, to that point, had only had one in my life. And I remember the first dog, I made a harness and hitched her up to a tire to get her to drag that around for a start. She didn't take to it well at all. Did not have that interest in her at all. But years later, I came across a vehicle that you could actually hitch dogs to and drive, and that was the Sacco cart, and that started my interest.
Now, what's a Sacco cart?
Well, that's the four-wheeled sulky that I use to drive our dogs. It's made in Norway, and apparently it's used pretty heavily for competitive sport over there besides just people enjoying driving their dogs, but they have various cross-country type things and races of three different durations and things that actually involve a teeter ramp where the dogs drive up the ramp and then goes down, sort of like agility with a sulky.
Huh. Oh, wow.
That's scary.
Now, that sounds fun.
Yeah, Borzois, tell us a little bit about them as a breed.
Well, Borzoi are a large greyhound-type dog. They were originated in Russia. Obviously, there's been greyhound-type dogs in almost every civilization, but the ones that live in Russia had to have a heavy coat. So Borzoi have a soft, curly coat, comes in a zillion colors, and they range anywhere from about 65 to 105, 110 pounds. But they're sleek, and they're fast, and they're quiet. They're a lot like greyhounds in temperament, but I like the extra bling of hair.
Now, we have a greyhound, and I'll tell you what, I would not trust that dog in the front of the cart. It saw a rabbit or a squirrel, we'd be gone. Borzois are also sight hounds. Is that a problem?
Well, actually, that's incentive. There's not a whole lot of downside for them pulling the vehicle because they get to tear around the countryside looking for their archenemy farm dogs or anything else, and slight inconvenience of me being attached to them just... you know, it is a very minor thing, particularly for two of them. But The nice thing about the Sacco card is it's quite steerable and you cannot lose them. And unlike a horse, which can pretty much leave when it chooses to at whatever speed it would like to, two Borzois, with the brake on the cart, one, I could stop them dead. But in an emergency, I could probably step off and stop it by hand with just, you know, with my balance, because two Borzois together are right around 200 pounds.
Well, that brings up a good point, because I was on your website and reading your story about the arch enemy farm dogs. Will you tell us a little bit about that story when you got up to 35 miles per hour?
Well, several times there have been farm dogs in the area that have come out to the highway or the dirt road that we're on to chase us driving. And I've always been able to dissuade them but my voice. And a couple of them have had to have the butt of the whip on their heads. But most of the time, the farm dogs will leave. Well, there were a couple of them that had been of particular excitement to the dogs over the years. And one of the days they came by in a pickup truck on the highway out in front of the house. And the owner of the pickup truck, of course, speeded past because he doesn't want his dogs jumping out of the truck.
Right.
So I had the two big boys at the time, and there was nothing else on the highway, and I just let them go because they were so excited about the barking dogs, and we're going to get them, we're going to get them. So I let them have their head and go as fast as they would like. But it was, as I wrote, it was truly terrifying knowing that, you know, a wheel comes off or anything happens, you're on asphalt and going at high speed. And, you know, like I said, once was enough to go that speed, but because my cart had a meter on it, I always know what my max speed had been, my average speed. So, you know, I keep records for that every time I drive.
So you've actually gotten it up to 35 miles an hour?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, they say greyhounds will hit 35 miles an hour in a race. That, and they're flying.
Well, actually, greyhounds actually can go faster than that in the sprint. That's why it was so amazing that the Borzois hit that speed. They regularly can go 35 when they're not encumbered. And some of them get closer to the greyhound speed for a short distance. But Borzois are better on a distance than a greyhound. Because a greyhound is, you know, it's been bred for 150 years for nothing but pure speed on a fairly short distance.
Well, that would be the other thing. My greyhound would hook up. We'd go for about 2 minutes, and she'd be done and laying down because that's it. That's all they really want to do is 2 minutes a week. So Borzois have more stamina, I hope.
So they have more stamina, and, of course, you have to build them up to it. They don't start out doing eight-mile routes, but when I drive, I need to spend the early part of the season working them up to that eight-mile route because pretty much in the country, there's only in certain intervals between roads, and all the routes leave my house and would come back to it in a circle are going to be close to 8 miles. All of them. I have three basic routes I can take, but 8 miles seems to be it. So we usually do 4 miles and then have a milk bone and water break and then do the rest of it. But I need the circular routes because unlike a barn sour horse, they don't want to go home. And if you just go out and back, they are so slow on the way back. Oh, you're killing us. This is horrible. We're so tired. And you turn down a side road and they're right back up to full speed again. So they're the exact opposite of a horse. So in order to trick them into continuing to go at a normal speed, I have to do a circular route so they aren't thinking about
going home.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. I would have never thought that.
I wouldn't have either, but that's how it works.
Now, do you stand up in the cart or do you sit down? Or
I stand on the back step of the cart because, one, I can see much easier. And remember, I'm on roads where I have to deal with traffic and change lanes and such, so I can turn around easily standing up and see what's going on behind me and see what's ahead of me. Secondly, when you're sitting down in the cart, you have to come to a full stop to dismount. In other words, in an emergency, you're kind of in trouble because you can't get off that vehicle without it coming to a stop. So it's a safety thing. And third, there are training carts for horses. I know people stand up. And certainly the other model that I have, which is sled dogs, sled dog drivers don't sit. They are always standing behind on the back and runners of their sled. And so, this cart is kind of a cross between things you would do with a horse and things you would do with a sled dog.
Now, when you said you steer the cart, how do you steer it? You're steering the dogs or the cart itself?
Well, the dogs are in shafts in the front, and the shafts are directly attached to the axle. Mm-hmm. And so the axle is on a front pivot, and the steering bar that comes back to where I'm standing literally moves the axle and puts pressure on the dogs to go left and right. So when you're training them, it only takes a few lessons before they understand the slightest pressure means to turn. And, of course, they learn the voice commands, too. But you can literally force them to go one direction or another from the back because both the shafts and the steering bar are attached to the same pivot.
Mm. I see.
Okay. But yeah, because that would be mighty small bits in that dog's mouth. They'd be tiny.
Yeah, there are other dog-driven vehicles. Now, when you were in many of the dogs that draw vehicles, they're basically doing obedience with a cart attached.
Right.
And drafting is entirely different than what I'm doing, which is driving.
Right.
And so there are a couple of other vehicles that are made that people can drive dogs in, but a lot of those require some sort of head harness or collar or something. And with the Sacco cart, you need absolutely no other control. The only thing you need to do is to make them want to go, because you can stop them and you can turn them. And there isn't a whole lot of choice. They have to turn and they have to stop if you use either the brake or the steering bar. So there's no necessity for anything on their head. And a lot of the other vehicles that are drivable, that have people sitting in it, has to have some sort of reins like a horse, and I just don't find that to be a very it's not a very reliable thing for an animal as flexible as a dog that can basically turn in half and turn around no matter what you have it in.
That's true. I didn't think about how flexible they were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, this is terrific. Now, do you just do it for pleasure? Are there competitions for this kind of thing or not?
No, not in the United States. I think most of the competition stuff seems to be done in Holland and Germany, even though the Sacco cart does come from Norway. But I think what the original importers did with it here is it's a great thing for training lead dogs on a sled team, because you can teach them the words for left and right and then force them to go a particular direction. So you've got instant reinforcement for your verbal commands because they are in the shafts and you move the shafts. But when I'm driving, there's just very little, I very seldom have to touch the steering bar because, one thing, we're driving a long distance on roads that don't have a lot of turns. But secondly, they learn the words so soon that you just don't even need to steer them.
Interesting. Well, Randy, you ready to go? You want to try it?
I think I could handle this one. I would be much happier with it being able to steer and stop rather than just be at their mercy. So I like this. I like this cart.
It is a neat cart. I love how it looks. It looks light, too. It looks very light.
Yeah.
63 pounds.
Yeah, it does look
63
light.
Pounds. That's great.
Well, basically, it was made by a bicycle company, and so the same tech that goes into making a bicycle light works well for the cart, too.
Now, I see you hooked up three in the one picture. You had the two that were hooked into the cart and then a lead.
Well, the lead dog is done just like sled dog. It's on a cable, and it's under voice command, and that worked real good on dirt roads where there's no traffic. Obviously, with no control over the dog out front other than voice, I would never be on the highway with it. Sure. However, the downside is the first squirrel or rabbit that runs across the road, the lead dog then takes after that. The cable then takes the legs out from under whichever dog is to the left or right, and you all end up on the fence.
So it's pretty much a mess.
Yeah, there's no control there. So the few times I've done it, it has been very, very exciting because the lead dog goes faster with something behind, and the dogs behind are faster because they have somebody to chase and push, and so the speed goes up exponentially. I cannot imagine how much fun it must be to do a full sled dog team, but they're never doing that on roads.
And are you so on your website too? It says you're putting together a four dog.
Well,
team.
At one point I was going to manage that because I wanted to be in sled dog race, but you would have to have you know, other equipment and such to do that. And I had some people that were willing to work with me up in Michigan and loan me a lead dog, but I needed 4 Borzoi trained for that. Unfortunately, as time went on, I lost, we have Borzois for show dogs, and our females will be in season, and you can't run those with the boys.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
As they got older, and we could only do the winter months because it's too hot for the dogs to, you know, trot
right.
with something behind them in the heat. They don't cool off anywhere near as well as a horse does.
Right.
So we were kind of restricted, and that dream, I'm afraid, has ended, but we will be doing some other work this year. Each year I go to the Invitational, I think about bringing the cart and a couple dogs to cruise around the grounds, but it's in March and it's frequently pretty hot by then. And they just occasionally have brought one on a leash just to be with me for the day, but it's not very pleasant for them.
Well, maybe they'll have you up there for a demo sometime, because this is so fascinating to drivers, I think, that you drive with your dogs. I think it's great.
Well, I'm not the only person with Borzoi that did it. I know 10 years ago there was somebody else actually in Florida that was doing it as well, but I think they no longer have Borzoi, so they probably got the cart sitting in a garage somewhere.
Well, I have to mention it to the organizers up there at Live Oak. I think this is something that I do agree with you, Wendy. I think this is something they would love to have in for a short demonstration.
Yeah, because it's so interesting
and different
and fun. Yeah, different.
Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us about your lovely kids.
I've enjoyed it.
Appreciate it. And by the way, the website is sylvanborzoi.com. We'll put a link to that on our website and also on our Facebook page as well. So you can go take a look at all the pictures of her driving her pretty boys. Now, how many do you have right now?
Oh, we kind of keep that a secret, but we always have it. We always have at least a dozen, counting the old dogs.
Okay. I thought there might be more than 3 in that picture.
Oh, of course. You always have these senior citizens and the young and upcoming. So the population changes over the years because we keep our old friends a long time.
But they are the most fit Borzois out there ever.
Pretty good.
All right. Thank you very much. Now it's time for Wendy's Traditional Chinese Medicine Update, and that is brought to you this week by WYSIWYG Carriages. Tell us about what's going on, Wendy.
Well, we have an exciting change at WYSIWYG Carriage. We just brought on Kathy Madonna, who many of you will remember as the secretary for the National Drive. We actually had her on the radio show a while back.
Yeah.
So Kathy has moved to Florida. She's actually my neighbor down here in Sarasota. And we drive together because she drives a pony pair. And so we've been driving together, and she's been helping me a little bit with WYSIWYG Carriages. And so she is going to take over the ordering and the running the day-to-day. And I'm still available for consults and all that. But if you need to talk to somebody and you need to place an order, as most of you know, I'm a little bit bad about, like, you know, being in one place at the same time and calling back. But Kathy is much better at that. And she's very organized. And Kathy will also be running our clinics that we're planning to do this winter. So our training clinics with the Cadwell girls, which also involve a lot of kayaking and fun afternoon events. So we'll have our updated website with Kathy's contact information. You can still always call me. And then we even now have a local Sarasota number. We went all out, and we're not just using cell phones anymore.
Terrific. So where can people find out more about it?
At www.sportcob.com.
www.sportcob.com.
And also, Glenn, I have to tell you something. We have a clinic that's through the Florida WIPS that I'm putting on this weekend, and it's about conditioning your horse, and we're going to run a little do temperature, pulse, and respiration and a little exam. And then we're going to send a horse down the road and do like a section A and D, and then come back and do a mock vet check and show how to take the temperature, pulse, and respiration and what those values mean and how you can evaluate your horse's condition and what to do in certain situations. So that should be a fun clinic. And then we are going off to the Salty Dog. That's this Saturday, August 18th. And it starts at 10 o'clock. It's here in Sarasota at Philip and Judy's Flying Lady Farm. And you can contact me either on our Facebook page. I'll share it to the driving show. But after that, we are going to go on a go to the Old Salty Dog for a street fair. That is to benefit Kurt Becker, who's the guy I talked to you about last week that had the accident where he fell off the ladder and he's now paralyzed from the waist down.
Oh, yeah. And so, that's when, this Saturday?
That's this Saturday, yep. And so the clinic is here at the farm. It's about 4 miles off of I-75. And then the street fair to benefit Kurt starts at noon in the Siesta Key Salty Dog.
Which is a restaurant, everybody.
Which is a restaurant, yep. It's a pub and restaurant, but there's going to be it'll be out in downtown in the street. There's going to be a dunk tank. Hopefully we can get Philip in the dunk tank. So I know many of you have been wanting to dunk Philip needs. So
are you going to be in the dunk tank? See, that would come down for that.
I think I'm going to have to take a turn in the dunk tank. I have a lot of enemies, so I can raise a lot of money.
I can come down for that and throw some balls to get you in the dunk
See,
tank.
See, look, I'm raising money already.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah.
All right, very good. Well, now it is time for Wendy's Traditional Chinese Medicine Update.
Well, today on our Chinese Medicine Update, we're going to talk about the Chinese plum, which the Chinese name is Wu Mei, and it's but we call it, our formula is called Mu Mei powder because the scientific name is Prunus Mu Mei, and that's the like the beautiful flowering Chinese plum tree that you see in a lot of the pictures. It's one of the you know, four favorite flowers of China. And it's very important in culture, but it's also important in medicine. It's been used since ancient times to help with diarrhea and dysentery because it's thought to have some, we call it astringent powers in Chinese medicine, but it means it like gets the liquid out of your intestines. Like it helps the water go back into your cells. And it also has some antibacterial properties. We use it a lot. Like the Mu Mei formula that I use is mostly for baby foal diarrhea or young baby animal diarrhea. And interestingly enough, in just the recent years, they've shown there's been some scientific studies saying that Mu Mei powder actually has some activity against roundworms or ascarids. And so that's a big problem in young animals. Usually in young animals, they'll have some diarrhea or unthriftiness due to ascarids. And then as they get older, they have immunity to it. So that's not a grown-up disease. So I think that's kind of an interesting correlation there. So on the Chinese medicine side, this is a sour-tasting plum. And that means it helps, like, support the liver. And the liver controls the spleen, and the spleen is what's important in diarrhea, because it can't like hold that in. So your liver like over controls your spleen, and then your spleen is too weak to, you know, actually process the fluids, so that you have watery diarrhea, or they can't process the food in your tummy and your intestines, and then you have like dysentery or bacterial diarrhea. So the things that I've talked about this many times before that cause your liver to be in excess are like stress, chemicals, dewormer, and a lot of baby diseases. You know, you see a lot of baby diarrhea when you're either weaning them or they're moving around. You know, babies are under a lot of stress living in their new world, you know, and they're exposed to different things, new foods. They go from mommy's milk to solid food. So that's one of the ways that they can do that. My formula, the Jintang formula that I have, has some other herbs that I've talked about in there before. And it's coptis. Remember I talked about golden yellow?
Yep.
And so coptis is an herb that helps heat. So I know it's kind of a gross subject to talk about, but, you know, I'm a vet. So anybody that's watched Animal Practice this week knows that vets are, like, totally gross and a little bit insensitive to people's, like, sensitivity.
There were a lot of people mad about Animal Practice this week. They cut the opening ceremonies short just to play that.
I know, but it was so funny because it really, it does hit home about vets. But but anyways, Coptis, you know, when you have a bacterial diarrhea is like hot and smelly, like if you have Giardia or whatever. So Coptis is an herb that we use to combat diseases like that, damp heat. Then also there's curcuma in it. Curcuma is also another name for turmeric. And turmeric is very hot in the news right now because it's shown that if you use turmeric with certain chemotherapies, it has double the effectiveness for intestinal cancers. Hmm. So turmeric is a very good herb to use in the intestines. It also has anti-inflammatory activities and also helps with your appetite. Turmeric is the yellow herb that's the main ingredient in curry.
Yellow
curry. And then the other one is a herb. It's from a plant. It's a fruit that's called hazy. It's also, the common name is chibula, but it's not really a common plant that we use as food, so that's one that you might not have heard of, but that's been used for many years for dysentery and diarrhea, and it also stimulates the appetite. So you can see from this formula, what we're trying to do when you have diarrhea is like stop the fluid loss, kill the bacteria, and get the animal eating again. So this is a very, it's a mild formula that you can use in babies that tries to do all those things. Hmm. Go ahead.
No, you go.
You know, I'm not recommending this as a medicinal treatment. I'm just talking about this as a food. But in Japanese culture, a very similar plum in their culture is the
umboshi.
They call it the umboshi.
Umboshi, okay.
Umboshi means dried plum because ume is the plum. It's a different species, but it's very close. And what they do is they take these plums, they're like kind of yellowy plums. And if you've seen it, the paste is a red paste, but the plum itself is yellow. They color it red just for, I think that's traditional. But they put all these plums in this huge vat, and then they salt them, and then they put a big weight on it, and they let it ferment in this big vat. And as it goes, so it's, they're pickling it. And as it sinks, as the weight sinks down and crushes the plums, all the juice at the bottom is umboshi vinegar. And that's used very commonly in salad dressings and condiments and things. And then the plums itself, sometimes you can see the whole plums packaged. And those are the most expensive ones because those are on the top. But then the ones that get squished down at the bottom, they make into umboshi paste, which is used in all different kinds of recipes. One of the most common ways to eat it is on a little ball of sushi rice with some seaweed. And that when you taste it, the plum is very salty because it's a pickle and is very, very sour. So it's salty and sour. Then you can add honey to it to add sweetness. And then you add the seaweed for saltiness, some more saltiness. And then so that has a lot of different tastes that help with your constitution. Like it helps your chi, it helps your liver, it helps like your ability to fight cancer. You know, it breaks down masses. So this is a very traditional thing that Japanese people eat. And it's very good for people that have bad digestion. So if you are the kind of person that every once in a while you eat something, it doesn't agree with your stomach, and you feel like you kind of have a weak constitution, or if you're somebody that gets diarrhea very frequently when you travel, then this would be a very good food to incorporate into your diet.
Huh. Interesting. So, and you can buy it as paste? Is that the best way to do it?
Yeah, you can buy it as paste. My favorite brand is the Eden brand of umboshi paste because it's organic and It's made from the bottom, that bottom layer of plums. Some of the other ones are I don't know all of the brands, but some of the others are made a little bit processed in a different way. But I know this is processed in the very traditional way. And in fact, Glenn, what I was saying that you could incorporate this into your diet is you can make salad dressing with it.
Hmm.
And it gives it a very unique taste. Like, I have made salad dressing with
okay.
it.
Okay, is that like saying you went out on a date and she had a great personality?
No, it's not like that.
Okay.
It's a good taste. It's kind of like a sweet tart.
Okay, yeah.
You know that taste you get on your tongue that's kind of, it's strong. Like if you put this paste just straight on your tongue, it's kind of sour and bitter. But if you put it in salad dressing, like I do soy sauce and lime juice and honey and umboshi paste and then sesame oil and a little olive oil and mix that up. You could also, if that's too strong for you, you can use mix in some Greek yogurt. And it's a really unique and interesting taste on salads. And your ice cream idea gave me a good idea because I think I'm going to try to figure out an umboshi ice cream topping for you.
There you go. See, now you're now you're in my league. And I,
yeah.
I am reading here that it also can, you can use it like as a, you can put it on corn on the cob or broccoli or things like that too.
Yeah, I have never had it on corn on the cob, but you know, since I'm trying to go non-dairy, I think that's a really great alternative. Because when I eat corn on the cob, I love to slather tons of
butter
on
it. Yeah, I mean, you got to put something on it.
Yeah. So this way, you don't have to put any salt on because it's so salty already. There's already so much salt in it. But that's a great way to do it. And like if you were going to make this for your dog, I don't know how you would incorporate it into your dog. I don't think your dog would really want to eat it, but you might be able to hide it in rice. Dogs are not always as experimentally about eating as we are.
That's true. We have a cat like that, actually.
You know what? How else I had it is we have great fish down here in Florida, and I had this fish called Ono, which is also called Wahoo. It's really good. It's like it's a kind of tuna, and it's a very firm white fish. And I grilled it, and then I just made a little sauce with the plums, and it was so good.
Well, terrific. I'd never heard of this before, so that's news to me.
Yep, so it's a good way to incorporate some unique taste to your diet and maybe use some use it a little medicinally for your animals.
Well, very good, Wendy. Thank you so much for talking to us about Chinese prunes.
You're welcome.
If you've missed any of the past shows, you can catch them all at drivingradioshow.com, all 57 of the past shows. And, you know, we have a lot of other shows on the network, too. And one of them is the Horses in the Morning show, which I do in the mornings with Jamie Jennings and my wife, Coach Jen. It's the only live morning show for the horse world. You can find that at horsesinthemorning.com. And many thanks to our sponsors, to WYSIWYG Carriages and also to the American Driving Society. That's it for this week, Wendy.
All right, well, remember to keep the shiny side up.